Position number 21872, reel 4.
Eddie Wallace, reel 4. Yep. We went along to the banks of the Seine and stopped at Honfleur because the Havre was on the opposite side and that was still in German hands, and of course they wanted it as a port. We wanted it as a port. And on the moles were situated gun emplacements of 88s and some of a bigger caliber guns as well, but we fought them from the other side of the Seine. In other words, we shelled them, and I can honestly say that we put every gun on those moles, eight of action. We put every one of them out. Colonel Champness, who was our regimental commander, he went over there when the Havre was finally taken and had a good look at those gun sights, and he was able to say, he'd come back and tell us that every one of those guns had been hit, and they could only have been hit by us because we were the ones who were firing at them from that area. So that was very nice to know that.
Were you getting counter fire from them?
Yes, oh yes, they fired back, but they never hit any of us. Near, but never hit any of us. An amusing experience also was prior to engaging those Germans over there, we'd found some German stick grenades, and we silly threw them into the sea. They went off. We thought we might catch a few fish, you see. And of course, you can guess what happened. Jerry started shelling us. So we beat a hasty retreat then from the beach itself. But from there, we went on up to Dieppe. That would be, I think, somewhere in September 44. And those Canadians never gave those Germans a chance. They had the old fire.
Flamethrowers?
Flamethrowers, yes, flamethrowers. And every dugout they came to, flamethrower on it from a distance. And as the Germans came out, they just shot them just like that. No prisoners.
Why do you think that was?
They're getting revenge back for Dieppe.
The Dieppe raid?
Dieppe raid, 1942. They admitted that, so that's what they were doing. They went on the rampage through Dieppe. Any German they saw there, bang, he'd had it. We went with them, of course, but we still had our 3-7s. We didn't go infantry there at all. But we saw what was happening. You couldn't stop it. Didn't dare stop it. And then from there we went on. Yeah, there's so much happening in between, but you can't recall it. We just didn't stop there. But we went various places. Brussels. Then on up to Brussels. Tielemont, just outside there. Tielemont, we went there. And they go, we went infantry there for a while, off with shore, it was Tielemont. And then,
what did you do as infantry?
Well, had a go at some of the German emplacements that were there. They were the other side of hillocks. We couldn't get the guns at them, so we went infantry there.
How did you attack them?
Crawling, and then Mills, the old Mills bombs, Mills grenades.
Was that successful?
Oh, yeah. And then back to the guns again, and I think Jerry was having a go at Brussels with V1s. And we went shooting V1s there. Then from there...
You mean firing your guns at V1 sights?
Yeah. No, not the sights, at the V1s itself. Yeah, the V1s themselves coming in.
What success did you have against them?
Very good. Very good. But we had better success later on. Nine times out of ten, the RAF dealt with those V1s. Of course, those V1s are very fast. They were doing, what, between 400 and 450 miles an hour, which was fast in those days. And a Spitfire, which was faster than a Hurricane, the Spit could only catch them coming in on a dive. And they used to get behind or alongside them in a dive, tilt them. And they used to go down that way. But we had success against them as well with ACAC. But nine times out of ten, the RAF were so numerous there that our radio location operators used to track V1s coming in, and suddenly you get the call IFF, which was identification friend or foe, and so you had to stop shooting. Of course, you knew there was a RAF plane there trying to have a go at them, so you had to stop it. Stop your shoot. The same thing happened at Antwerp. We went up to Westkapelle, was it Westkapelle? Anyway.
Westkapelle is at Walcheren.
Walcheren, you're right. You're right, we went e-boat shooting there. Anyway, Antwerp, we joined up with the 80th American Brigade, under Lieutenant General Armstrong, chap named Armstrong, that's right. And by then, our guns had been given a new fuse setter, Mark 11 fuse setter? Yeah. A different radio location outfits. And we were getting a good 90% success with all B1s coming over. A good 90%, which is something very, very good. It was then, incidentally, that we met up with the only unit in the American Army which was affiliated to a regiment in the British Army. That was the Boston Archers. They were the ancient and honourable company of archers and handgunmen, I think they called themselves in those days. They were formed in the 1630-something or other by an immigrant from London, who was a member of the HAC. And he formed them over in Boston. And they came over with the National Guard, part of the National Guard, and they were part of this 80th ACAC Brigade, American ACAC Brigade. We met up with them there. And in fact, we've affiliated to them, and they come over to us even there, and we go over there.
How efficient were they?
Very good. Very good. Oh, yeah, yeah. You hear a lot about Americans and all that, but they were very good. Yeah.
And you were shooting at V1s in Antwerp?
V1s outside Antwerp, yeah.
Did you bring many of these V1s down?
Yes, we did. Every time. Every time. Every shoot.
You mean you never missed?
We never missed. Not with this MFS 11 and the new radio location stuff we had. I was reading... If you did, just... Can you turn it off?
Don't worry about the book. Just go from memory.
Yeah, okay. I know there was about 3,000 V1s went over, and only about 200 got through. All the rest were shot down. not only by us, of course, but by the other ACAC units around that area.
And you say you went into action against Eberts in Walcheren?
Yes, Walcheren. Once Antwerp had been taken, we were going up through Holland when they suddenly realised that Eberts were still entrenched, shall I call it, or harboured, in some of the islands off of Holland. And they were coming down, having a go at the merchant ships that were coming into the Havre, you know, with troops and supplies and all that.
Into Antwerp?
Into Antwerp, yes. And so we came through onto Middelburg, passed through Middelburg to West Capelle, and we set up gun emplacements there, and we had a go at some of the E-boats coming into the Scheldt.
Any success there?
Yeah, we had one, but they seemed to disappear all of a sudden, so I presume they must have been overrun on the islands going up.
Was this at night or?
Night time. Yeah.
Did they fire back?
Yes, they fired back at you with machine guns. That's all they could do, but it's too far out for them to be of any use. Yeah, we were in them. In fact, we had taken over a German encampment there. Nissenhuts.
What other memories have you got from this period?
All I can say now is that the Dutch were very, very friendly towards you. Very friendly. Couldn't do enough for you. Even there, exactly the same. You go back there. But as I say, it's such a long time ago now that your memory... No, you can't remember much about it all now.
Did you take any action in regard to supporting Arnhem?
Yes. One of our troops, well, my own troop, E troop and F troop from 383 Battery went up there and on this side of the river and assisted them, those that were coming away from Arnhem, over the river. And we had a go, a ding-dong shells with some of the German stuff on the other side.
Did that involve you personally?
Not me personally, no. I wasn't involved in that personally. But I know the guns did, our battery guns did go up there.
Any memories from the winter of 44-45?
Not really, other than the fact there was about 3 feet of snow all the way around. We never had any Christmas dinner or anything like that. We had biscuits. We went up to Dinan because Jerry was breaking through, as you know. We went up to Dinan and took up positions there with the 37s. And any Americans that came through, we arrested until they could prove that they were Americans belonging to an American unit and not American-speaking Germans dressed up as American soldiers.
How did the Americans take to that?
They didn't. They didn't like it at all. But it's just too bad. That's the way we acted. I think we were right in doing it too.
Did they resist?
No. Well, they couldn't. They couldn't resist. They were coming through in jeeps, captured jeeps and things like that. But,
did you see anything of the Germans?
No, not there.
What about the Rhine crossing?
No, we didn't take part in that at all. We didn't take part in any of that. We were in Holland.
Did you push into Germany?
Only after the war was over. When the war was over. In fact, we were at West Capelle. And one night, 8th of May. No, before the 8th of May. It may have been, I can't remember now. We saw the sky light up in the distance. Eastwards from where we were. And we thought, hello, Antwerp's getting a bashing. But it turned out peace had been declared and all the lights were on. All the street lights had been put on, and it was reflection from the clouds.
Did you have celebrations for VE Day?
We didn't, no. No. We remained at West Capel for a good 2 weeks after that. And then we came back down to a place called Weesmonster, just outside Brussels, to get new guns and be re-equipped, ready for the Far East. And of course, Harry Truman, God bless him, caused the H-bomb to be the A-bomb to be dropped, and that stopped that lot. Thank goodness. I can imagine what would have happened. But from there, we went on into Germany as occupation troops, Osnabrück.
Did you experience the German air attack of the 1st of January 1945? The German Air Force had a sort of last throw on New Year's Day.
Yes. Sorry, I'm thinking of the other end. That's when I got demobbed, wasn't it? Yeah. No.
Presumably, you might have been at West Capella.
Must have been. No, we didn't have anything there.
What was the occupation of Germany like?
Very sombre. Very sombre. The place was in ruins.
Which place was
that? Osnabrück. Osnabrück. Funny, my son, when he was in the army, was stationed there as well, Osnabrück. But the place was in ruins. Of course, there was non-fraternisation. We weren't allowed to speak to anybody. I was only there a short while because I was demobbed under Class X.
What was Class X?
Z Class release, Class X and Class Z, urgently needed back home. Builders, bricklayers and all that, carpenters were required back home as well, urgently. The war reserves were being disbanded, the special constables had been disbanded, and the majority of the regular police left were of pensionable age. A lot of them had been kept on for the war. They couldn't retire, been kept on for the war. And of course they were going. So they wanted back all those policemen that had been called up. So I returned to Albert Road Police Station.
In 45?
On Christmas Day, 1945. In civvies. The stores were closed, so I couldn't get a uniform. They wouldn't give me the day off. So I had to go on the switchboard at Albert Road Police Station for 8 hours, yeah.
How do you feel now about having served in the army and police force in the Second World War?
Well, put it this way. I'm very grateful that I did serve in the army because it allowed me to meet people that I would never have met as individuals, you know, personally. And I managed to get the other man's point of view of things, which greatly assisted me when I came back to the force again. And I can understand why now policemen were so well liked in 1926 during the general strike and afterwards. They had all served in the armed forces, majority of them served in the armed forces during the First World War, met the other chap, got to know his side and all that. So we're one of them. We're one of them. Which is something you don't get now. You see. Now I was extremely grateful. I could meet with people after the war who had served and chatted with them. You know, members of the public chatted with them. And if you had to arrest somebody, you know, for some reason or other, you got talking to him like a person to person. You called him sir. They called you sir. You respected them, and they respected you. And no, I think everybody who join the police force just before the war and were called up, or those who joined after the war and had been in the service, were a great asset to the public. They were, without a doubt. Not like they are now. Now, I retired in on the 1st of September 1971. Unfortunately, on April Fool's Day 1967, the Portsmouth City Police, the Southampton Borough Police, no, Southampton, they were a city then, that's right, Southampton City Police and the Hampshire Constabulary ceased to exist. They were amalgamated and became the Hampshire Constabulary. Now, that's when things started to deteriorate. You find every amalgamated force went down.
Why should that have been?
Well, they tried to, as far as my force was concerned, they tried to regulate you as fast as the slowest policeman in the new force, and that was a village bobby. Well, it didn't work in the town. You couldn't have it in the town. No, and you got people coming in from the county as, should we say, superintendents and all that, who'd never done any city work at all. They just didn't know what was happening. Just didn't know. You had to abide by their wishes, and that was it. And this is the reason why so many chaps left. And, well, I just don't know what's happened to the police force now. They're not respected at all.